Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OGGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Corey Waldron. What's up, Corey?
Devastated that we're not talking about Pacers Raptors.
I know this one hurts, and it was a very good series for the Pacers. You know, a great season, like I mentioned to you in the DMs.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it was a very tough series, a very long series, but we definitely got the first round dramatics we were all looking for.
Exactly. We saw, you know, they had to push LeBron to be really good. And as I mentioned to you, I thought it was, you know, a lot of great experience for the Pacers players, where some of them probably weren't ready for that first round matchup with LeBron. Next time going forward, they have that experience that can really help them. But let's talk Cavs Raptors. You know, regular season matchup 2-1. Cavs won the series, and the two wins for the Cavs came in the last two. The Raptors won in the first series, which I think was like earlier in the season. What are your thoughts on this? Anything we can take from the regular season Cavs and Raptors?
As I've said numerous times when we talk Cavs-Raptors, I think what you can take away is the fact that I think LeBron has a mental hold over top of the Raptors. I think they fear him. I think when they see him enter an arena, it just gets in their head that we can't beat this guy to a degree. And, you know, those couple of wins they had late in the season over the Raptors were when the Cavs really weren't playing great basketball, but LeBron James and company found a way to win. If you look at the Cavs in general, their bench played a lot better during those regular season matches than they did in the postseason, in the first round. But I think if you're the Cavs, you don't mind having to see the Raptors. Whereas I think if the Raptors, who, you know, the Wizards took them to six games, I think you have something to be a little bit concerned about.
Yeah, you mentioned it. They're kind of scared of LeBron and the Cavs. They've swept them last year in round two, and the year before that, they beat them in the Eastern Conference Final 4-2. So they definitely have that mental advantage on them, where so the Raptors might be the more talented and deeper team, but that mental aspect will definitely play some part in the series. What do we learn about the Cavs in round one?
What we learned is LeBron doesn't need a ton of help. He just needs some guys to hit some timely threes to give him something. Every game the Cavs won, you know, LeBron was LeBron great. And he had either Kyle Korver or in game seven, he had Tristan Thompson with a double-double. He had somebody step up, maybe not for the whole game, but they at least gave him a quarter or two of good basketball, enough to give him some kind of support. Because overall, LeBron was tremendous the entire first round. He dominated. He started 7-for-7 in game seven against the Pacers to really kind of set the tone of that game. For me, I think it's just LeBron.
Yeah, LeBron was amazing. He almost a 30-point triple-double in round one. I think what I take away is the supporting cast was pretty trash, especially the bench. Like you mentioned, Jordan Clarkson wasn't very good. Rodney Hood was inconsistent. Just a lot of guys had bad games. Kyle Korver had a few good games, also a couple bad ones. Kevin Love showed up like for maybe six quarters of the series, and then the rest of the series he was pretty, you know, out of it. I will say defensively they were a little bit better than what they were in the regular season.
Yeah, I'll agree. Their defense definitely was better. It slowed down. What I can say to that, though, not to take credit from their solid defensive play, the Pacers' offense, when they locked up Victor Oladipo, really got stagnant. And I guess that's something you can take away if you're the Cavs, because, you know, the Raptors don't play a ton of iso ball as they used to, but when they get rattled, they do. And I think if they were to put a lot of pressure on DeMar DeRozan early, their offense could unravel a little bit.
Yeah, it could be a problem. You kind of take them out of the game, make passing hard for them. I think Tristan Thompson also, that impressive game seven, if he can play like that and give LeBron some extra possessions, some extra rebounds, you know, a few points down low in the pick and roll, set some good screens, it would be huge for them.
Yeah, I mean, Tristan Thompson played fantastic in that game seven, and I will be shocked if we don't see a lot more of him.
How surprised were you that he played that well?
We've seen Tristan Thompson play like those high energy moments. So I wasn't like completely taken out of it by it, but I definitely was surprised to just see how dominant he was from start to finish, you know, 15-10. And I think that huge block on the end he had on Victor Oladipo was kind of like the nail in the coffin, even though the game was still in play.
Yeah. He was big on that. And like I said, some of the screens he said, it was interesting to see him come in and have such great energy after not playing for so long.
Yeah, and he drew a lot of good early fouls on Miles Turner, which really, it kind of hurt the Pacers early on.
And it kind of took Miles Turner out of his groove as well, too. But from the Raptor side, what did we learn in round one?
I mean, what we learned in round one is at least they can take care of business. right? The Wizards came out in those games 3 and 4, and they really took it to the Raptors. You know, Beal and Wall had 28 points apiece in game 3. I know Wall had another great game in game 4. And after losing those two games, they came home, they won. And I thought game 6, to me personally, was going to be really defining for the Raptors. If they had lost that game 6 and this was going to be a 7-game series, I would have really questioned them. But then taking care of business game 6 on the road, to me, show that this is still, you know, the best the East has as of right now, I think.
Yeah, I would say I'm a little bit different. I feel like the Wizards series didn't make me feel much more confident about them. Like, they did handle business in 6 games, but it wasn't like, all right, we're definitely the better team. Like, you feel like Washington kind of blew some of the games and they just played like not up to the talented level that they were have. And then Otto Porter being banged up and having to leave and get surgery, I think really hurt them. So Toronto for me still has a little bit to prove. I'm not fully confident in them, but they did show some positive things. I think at times, like you kind of hinted at, they get back to isolation a little bit too much and they did have some high turnover games. But another factor for them, Fred VanVleet actually is huge. You know, like the games he didn't play, it definitely had an impact. And the games he did play, he had an impact, and he helped a lot of the bench players kind of take off.
Well, I think, Fred VanVleet obviously is the key member of that bench mob, as they call themselves. But I think the bench mob in general is crucial for them, because their bench really didn't play a pivotal role in the first round series. They had a few nice moments, but they really struggled overall, which is why I think we saw, you know, the starters struggle, because all year long, they've been dependent on that bench unit being successful.
Yeah, and I think Fred VanVleet not being there for most of the series was a bigger reason for that. We'll see what happens in the next round, but let's talk Cavs. Where can they attack the Raptors?
It's tough. I mean, because the Raptors are a very sound team on paper compared to the Cavs. I mean, I think for the Cavs, you do want to attack the bigs. Obviously, Valanciunas isn't the greatest defender. He's a little slow on his feet. I think you kind of want to make the Raptors play down to your small ball. You don't want the Raptors to play, you know, Ibaka and Valanciunas. So I think you want to attack them. Maybe you bring them out of the paint more, do some isolations, some high screens. But I think for LeBron and company, it's LeBron attacking and then trying to get open shots with the shooters. I think that's the best way to attack the Raptors.
Yeah, I think they need to attack them mentally, and that means getting out the hot starts, maybe blowing them out in game 1, trying to hurt their confidence, because they, like we hinted at, have that bigger advantage. Also, get on the fast break. I believe the Raptors allowed the most fast break points in round 1. That's an area for the Cavs to get some easy buckets, especially the bench unit that has been struggling. From the Raptor side, where can they attack the Cavs?
Everywhere, right? obviously the Cavs defense was better in the first round. But I think the Raptors have to stick to their guns. You know, they play a really good in-and-out game. They use, you know, Valanciunas, Ibaka, Siakam?
Pascal Siakam.
Siakam. They use those three guys. They beat those three guys down low, and it kind of spaces out the floor for those guys like DeRozan, who's been a better three-point shooter this year than over his career, CJ Miles, Fred VanVleet, Kyle Lowry. So I think for them it's really just – you know, maximizing the in and out game. Obviously, the Cavs had a huge game 7 performance from Tristan Thompson, but outside of that, they really didn't have good production at, you know, the center position all series. You know, Kevin Love was solid a little bit on the boards, but he doesn't give you much defensively. He kind of got bullied all series. Larry Nance Jr. had a very poor first round series. So I think for the Raptors, you want to just beat them down low and free up those open shots.
Yeah, I'm making the supporting cast beat me. LeBron, we know, is dominant, and, you know, if he is going to get 40 and 10 assists and 10 rebounds, you're probably going to lose, because these guys can at least give him a couple points. But if you're limiting LeBron in some sense and making his life difficult, these other guys have yet to prove in the playoffs that they consistently put up points. I think it was on a previous show we talked about it. Only 2 Cavs were averaging over 10 points a game, and that was LeBron and Kevin Love.
Only had 11 points per game, so it wasn't like he was lighting it up like normal.
Exactly. And then they have guys like Jordan Clarkson, who I've been killing on the podcast, but he's just been so bad in the playoffs. Rodney Hood's been bad and inconsistent. You know, Korver's been hit or miss. J.R. Smith, hit or miss. Tristan Thompson, is he going to put up a game like this all the time? I think you just have to force the other guys to beat you. Like, they've proven that they can't really do anything so far, and your supporting cast has proven they can definitely put up some points. And the bench, like you mentioned it, you know, having this bench mob, this is the area that's helped them a lot in the regular season. This should be a series where they dominate the other bench.
No, I agree. This is definitely an area where the bench unit is going to play a pivotal role.
And I'd mentioned their defense being a little bit better. They still play weak defenders, though. Kyle Korver, at his age, cannot defend. Kevin Love cannot defend out in the open. And J.R. Smith only defends about 50% of the time. So there's just plenty of options to kind of attack these guys.
That's something the Pacers did a lot, but then I don't think did enough. But they definitely, whenever Kyle Korver was out there, they looked to attack Kyle Korver, and they really looked to attack Kevin Love, too, on pick and rolls. You know, those two guys are just very flat-footed.
Not to talk about the Pacers, but I noticed one thing that Victor Oladipo was able to do later in the series, and that he actually realized that these defenders were so bad that even when they trap him or double-team him, that they're so slow that he can probably still get past them.
Yeah, I think that's something that DeRozan probably has looked at a ton in film.
Yeah, and they have Kyle Lowry. You know, like Darren Collison, he had some solid moments in the series, but we talked about he's not aggressive enough. Lowry is a lot more aggressive, and he's a guy that might put up 30 points in a game.
I think this is a big series for Kyle Lowry in general. You can make the argument that, you know, obviously, who cares what happened in round one, but against the Cavs in general, he can't afford to have, you know, a slowish series. He needs to be at his absolute best, I think, to really compliment DeMar DeRozan.
Exactly, and I think George Hill, talking about matchups moving to there, George Hill being healthy, he had a really nice second half run for the Cavs in that game seven, but not really much else in the series being banged up. I think him and Lowry matching up in this series at the point guard position will be interesting to keep an eye on.
Yeah, especially if he's healthy. I mean, we saw his impact in the second half of that game seven. He didn't even play the first half, but he, you know, he didn't do anything crazy on the offensive side. I think he had a bunch of free throws though. But
11, I believe, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, you could just tell his impact though. So if he plays like that, he's giving them the tenacious defense he's known for, then I think that's definitely going to be a matchup to look at.
And one thing that's really underrated is LeBron literally does so much that bringing the ball up the floor for him makes his life that much easier. Or just giving him he hit LeBron a few times in the post or on the way to the rim, so he didn't have to necessarily work for the bucket. And I'm sure LeBron appreciates that, especially with the lack of playmakers. And with George Hill being in there, they can play the bench a little bit more if he's healthy. I mean, a little bit less. Also, LeBron, I think, versus the Raptors in terms of matchups, like, who's going to defend him? What are they going to do? Are they able to slow him down? Are they double-teaming him hard? What are they doing?
The Raptors' best chance when going against LeBron James is going to be it's really hard because I'm just going off what I think is still the best way to beat LeBron, and it's to limit him driving. It's to limit him getting the easy buckets in the rim. The Pacers failed to do that.
Especially
they tried their
the
best.
And ones.
What?
Especially the and ones.
Yeah, you know, he just gets to the rim so easily. And, you know, you can make the argument that the refs, you know, they don't call charges on him or whatever the case may be. You know, at the end of the day, you still can find ways around it. Or, you know, I don't like that cop-out excuse. But I think for LeBron, you want him to still shoot the jumpers. You know, in game six where the Pacers blew out the Cavs, LeBron was settling for a lot of three-point shots. Obviously, he's been better with the long ball and the jump shot this season, but I think you want him to be forced to put up jump shots. You want him to be farther out. You just don't want to give him space on those jump shots.
Yeah, no, I agree. And even in game seven, he hit a lot of jump shots, but he's probably not going to be able to do that for four games to win it, unless you're, you know, giving him wide open looks. I still think you try to force the ball out of his hands a little bit more. Just give the attention, take, you know, put some pressure on some of these other guys to hit wide open shots that they've yet to do. You probably put OG on him. And I feel like I talked about this, that LeBron is fatigued. He mentioned that he's burnt after the seven-game series. Like, kind of annoy him. Like, have somebody pick him up full court all the time. Like, really just pester him and try to make his life as difficult as possible. He is human, so that's just another way to kind of attack him.
Yeah, I didn't put my thought into that, but I think if you're the Raptors, you definitely want to make LeBron have to play heavy minutes again early on in the series. Like, you don't – like, you know, the hot start we mentioned that would be really important for the Cavs. That's the exact opposite what the Raptors want. The Raptors want this to be a slow start for the Cavs. They want to see LeBron have to play, you know, 45 minutes in game one. You want him to be out there as much as possible because this series, more than likely, is still going to go 6 or 7.
Yeah, and I think you want to attack him offensively, make him work. Don't allow him to hover, which he was able to do a little bit in the Pacers series. So I think you need to kind of make him attack. What about DeRozan? Obviously, he's going to be another big matchup. Who's going to defend him for the Cavs, who struggled with Oladipo until they started double-teaming, and he still had big games?
Yeah, I don't know what you do with DeRozan. I'm guessing there's still going to be some Kyle Korver on him, which isn't ideal. Yep. Jeff Green, I know there's J.R. Smith played decent perimeter defense, but then, you know, offensively, J.R. Smith is pathetic at this point. It's actually really sad to watch where how far his game has come down, you know, from being really streaky to being, you know, 2 out of 10 games, I'm going to give you some points. He's frustrating to watch. But I know with DeRozan, you're going to want to do similar to what you want to do with LeBron. You want to make DeRozan shoot more than him driving. You don't want him to get to the basket. You definitely don't want him to get to the free throw line. You want him to have to settle for tough contested jump shots. Obviously, he's been better this year, but it's still an element that I think is fresh to his game. And I think if you're forcing him to shoot a lot of jump shots and he's missing them early, then, you know, that shakes DeRozan a little bit. Then he probably goes into more isolation situations, try and beat you off the dribble. And I think that's where the Cavs have the biggest advantage against DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, it's really tough with DeRozan. You know, you can try to make him force to shoot threes, but is he going to settle if he doesn't hit? He might go back to his old game. And he's probably one of the best contested mid-range shooters in the league. We're working in that mid-post. And like you said, JR is really inconsistent. Korver would probably get cooked by him. Jeff Green is an interesting matchup. You don't want to, you know, make LeBron use a ton of energy and defend him. So DeRozan's probably going to get his in the series. I expect a big series from him unless they make some type of adjustment and force the ball out of his hands.
I think you gotta. That's the one way that I think you can really get underneath his skin.
And then you put the pressure on Lowry to perform. You know, you're like, all right, Kyle, you got to make plays here. We're gonna take the ball out of DeRozan's hand. Show us that you can still do it. Moving on to another matchup, we're talking about the bench, which we talked about a little bit when the Raptors attacking the Cavs. I think this is an area you have to keep an eye on. Are the Raptors going to dominate? Can some of these guys step up? Can Clarkson, Hood, and Nance step up? They are talented, but we didn't see that in round one.
Yeah, no, we definitely didn't see it in round one. I think a guy like Jordan Clarkson to me, who's very erratic offensively, you know, we saw him come alive for one first half. Like you said, though, you know, Rodney Hood, Larry Nance Jr., those guys are all high energy guys. Jordan Clarkson, those guys, you know, when they're on fire, this Cavs team seems to have more life because those guys are so energetic. So I think you definitely need those guys to just, you know, hit a couple shots earlier. Maybe you even put in a couple sets early on when they're on the floor that gets, you know, directly involved in, you know, getting those guys involved.
Yeah, I think getting on the fast break scenario, I want to see them kind of attack. Like I mentioned, Raptors allowed the most fast break points to their opponents in round one. Clarkson, Nance, and Hood are all guys that can get out and run. Deciding factor in the series.
I mean, LeBron James.
Yeah.
I think his level of greatness will determine, you know, how this series unfolds. I'm not ruling out the Raptors winning this series, but I do think that at the end of the day, I am done predicting against LeBron James, but done going against him. He has to be beaten. It's plain out that simple. The Warriors or Rockets, that's a different story. But in the East, he has to be beaten before I'm going to say he can be beaten.
See, I think LeBron is like a lock to have a great series. Like, you're just not going to really stop him unless you do what I said and just force the ball out of his hands completely and go crazy. But I think the supporting cast is a deciding factor for the Cavs. If they can give him somebody, more than one guy over 10 points a game, they probably have enough to beat the Raptors. But if these guys don't show up and miss a ton of shots and don't play great defense, it's going to be really hard for LeBron to beat a more balanced Raptors team and a more experienced Raptors team than the Pacers in round one. And then the fact is, Oladipo being that only key cog for the Pacers to attack, now he has to deal with Lowry and DeRozan and some other guys off the bench who've done a good job creating too.
I mean, I'll even flip my pick to not Kevin Love. And you mentioned, I mean, not how, well, I gave it away. Away from LeBron to Kevin Love. I think Kevin Love, you know, if the Cavs are going to go anywhere in the playoffs, it may not even be the supporting cast. It's got to be just Kevin Love. You know, he needs to be regular season Kevin Love. The Cavs were so much better in the regular season when Kevin Love was on the court and healthy and playing good basketball. And that first round, you know, 11 points ain't 18 to 19 points. That's a huge difference. And they really need him to be the consistent jump shot shooter. Maybe he had better against the Serge Ibaka, who's a little bit slower, and, you know, Jonas Valanciunas, but I need him to show me a lot in this series.
George Hill also helped him get going in the fourth quarter of game seven, something to keep an eye on. I think Love, you want him to average 20, 25 a game. That's what you kind of expect from your all-star at this point, and he needs to kind of live up to that hype and start hitting some shots. That means getting to the – if you're not hitting your layups, you're not hitting your shots, get to the free throw line. Like, you're a crafty player. Make somebody foul you. Prediction, what do you got?
I'm going with the Cavaliers – in seven. Wow. I think it's another grinded out series. I think it goes down to the end. And I think LeBron in a game seven in Toronto with Drake chirping on the sideline does something else spectacular to make us all, you know, pick up our jaws off the floor.
See, I think the Cavs are going to win, but I have a hard time, determining if it's going to be game six or game seven. It's a big task to win game seven on the road in Toronto, which has been known to get really crazy. The hype with this team, the hype in beating LeBron, it almost feels like the Cavs winning this series would almost have to happen in six. I feel like as good as LeBron is in game sevens, that home court and the rest of the supporting cast and that bench mob of the Raptors might be too much at a game seven. So I'm going to go Cavs in six. And that's the mental aspect winning, and that's Kevin Love, playing like he can. Some of these role guys kind of getting out of the jitters that they had in round one and kind of stepping up, being, all right, this is our next move. I think LeBron can kind of use that to kind of motivate the team. Like, yo, you guys played like trash, and we still won against a pretty good Pacers team.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's going to be one of those series where the Cavs may even be down 3-2 and they have a huge game six win at home. The supporting cast all comes alive. And then in game seven, it's one of those ones where the Raptors just kind of look defeated and LeBron takes over.
What percentage chance do you think that the Raptors have at winning the series?
I mean, I actually, I'll be flat out truthful with you. I think they have, the better odds. I think they're a 60% favorite if I was to give you an honest opinion.
Yeah, I'd say 50-50. I think LeBron and then the Raptors. The rest of the Cavs aren't included. It's LeBron or the Raptors. So
Yeah.
it's just so much for him to do, but though I almost would take it as a positive that the Cavs played so bad, like the supporting cast played so bad against the Pacers and they still won the series, and the Pacers not being a bad team and them not playing terrible. I think you can almost look at that as a positive from the Cleveland perspective.
No, I agree. I think it's definitely not a negative.
Yeah, like unless they continue playing this bad, I don't know if some of the guys can even play much worse. And I think Tristan Thompson game seven, him and Valanciunas is an interesting matchup. Those offensive rebounds for a player like LeBron when he's shooting 50% from the field are huge. Anything else you want to throw in there, Cavs, Raptors wise, before we get out of here, Corey?
I mean, just look at the stars of this series. It's going to come down to Kevin Love and LeBron James versus DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. Two-headed team is going to come out on top. And LeBron counts as two people in general, so.
He's like a five-headed monster, but that's for another day. As always, thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for hopping on, Corey. You can catch the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and Google Play and Dash Radio.
Peace.